Okay, my name is Adriana Widows, and I'm here with Kylie Thompson on July 1st, 2016, at the First Presbyterian Church in Hudson, New York, as part of the Oral History Summer School's project to collect the stories and histories of Hudson area residents. Kylie, could I please ask you to introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Kylie. What else do you want me to say?
Thank you. Can you tell me a little bit about where you come from?
I'm originally from Virginia, tiny little town called Deltaville, which is right on the Chesapeake Bay between two fairly large rivers. So I'm used to farming and watermen activities, and then I moved to New York. Lived there for about 20, or New York City, lived there for about 20 years. And while I was there, I kind of realized that city life is real exciting and a lot of fun, but I yearned for that country escape. So about 6 years ago, I moved up here.
Can you maybe share an early memory of what you thought or experienced when you first came to Hudson?
I had been driving around with my ex-fiance, looking for some sort of property, and the whole idea was to find a place that didn't require a car. And she came up here. She bought the tickets for my birthday, and it was February, and it was raining. And we stayed at a bed and breakfast at where Fish and Game is now. That used to be a bed and breakfast, now Fish and Game's like this high-end restaurant. And I remember walking around in the rain, in the cold. She was sick and sniffling and just letting me kind of explore. And so we really didn't do a whole lot of exploring, but I remember going up and down Warren and up and down Adams and just kind of being jaw-dropped at all of the different architectural styles and types that were here and how well maintained everything was, even in February. So I kind of felt like this is a good place to keep returning until I found something either in town or outside of Hudson.
Can you talk a little bit about what you ended up finding?
The first project or the second project?
Both.
Both?
I didn't know there were
Oh,
two.
well, the first project is the farm. I ended up, we cruised for roughly 8 months, 9 months, coming up here almost every weekend with her two boys, looking for a place to nest out in the country, but still have a little bit of that city life. And everything in Columbia County was way too expensive. It could not afford it. And went all the way up into Rensselaer County, couldn't do that. Went to Ulster, couldn't do that. And finally discovered Greene County. And Greene County is probably half the price of all these other counties. And the only reason that I can figure is that they just haven't tapped into the whole tourist trade yet. And discovered this farm that was built in 1755. It's one of the oldest farms in the county. And within 3 to 5 minutes of just being on the land, I knew instantly that this is where I needed to plant my flag. It was run down, tore up, the windows were busted, the doors were busted. I mean, it was in really bad shape, overgrown. Bees were in one closet that had turned it into a hive. I mean, there was just all kinds of craziness, but you just knew. And I can't even, the price was right and the vibe was there and I just knew it. So after a couple of years of trying to renovate that, finding pre-Civil War plumbing, all kinds of, like I discovered corn cob insulation, which I had never heard of, but apparently it was very common. Yeah, so after learning all of the things not to do in renovation, I was still kind of longing for a place in Hudson, and the opportunity came for me to purchase a place here on Third and State, and hence Third State Hudson. And again, the price was right, and the previous owner was able to owner finance, which meant I didn't have to deal with a bank. And I was able to get things up and running in about 6 months. It didn't need nearly as much work as the farm did, but it took me almost 3 years to finish just the interior. Those are my two projects.
That's really interesting. Do you think that you are have a certain attraction to things that are run down?
Sadly, yes. Yeah, I really do. The idea of renovating or restoring or bringing life back to something that's been neglected really attracts me. The idea of building new when there's so much old that's so ready to be taken care of. Like, what's the point? It's the structures are there. Why not use them? Why build new when you can do more for less with old?
Does the name Third State have any particular meaning to you?
Two meanings. One, it's on the corner of Third and State. So that's the very surface answer. The hidden meaning behind it all, though, is I have a strong electronic background. I've done electronic music for probably 24 years now. So, doing electronic music, you understand circuitry, you understand like how noises are made for the dance. For dance music, but part of building something is there's three stages. One is all of the parts are taken apart. The next stage is putting it all together before making it complete. And then the third state is where it's complete, but it's been powered off. And that's called third state electronic. And that was kind of the meaning behind Third State Hudson is I wanted it to be complete, but I wanted people to unplug. There's no TVs in any of the rooms. There's, I think, one radio in one apartment, which is there really just for emergency purposes for the building. Yeah, I really want people to put the TVs down, put their phones down. I've got a chest of board games on the first floor. I want people to raid it and play games with each other, or with their friends, family, whatever. The idea of tuning out and being unplugged means a lot. I fought for almost a year and a half to not have Wi-Fi, and finally people begged and pleaded, and I broke down and said yes. But yeah, I didn't even want Wi-Fi in there. That's Third State.
How do you feel the neighbors responded to you when you came in and started renovating Third State?
Open arms. I did not expect it at all. The neighborhood was really run down. There were a lot of crack shacks where people would hang out on the porches and do their deeds, and people were always coming and going. I had the Bangladeshis that are across the street were very cautious that somebody had bought the place and was doing renovations there. Within a month, like, I knew them all by first name. And they really kind of took a keen interest in the well-being of the building and the future of the building. Turns out that they own a lot of the property around the area, and so they look at it as a boost to their land value, which is pretty wise. My other neighbor's Jamaican, and he has been renting out his place to lower income individuals, and he saw it as like an opportunity to raise his rents because he saw a higher class of people coming through. But his idea of raising rent was really to get rid of the crackheads. And within 6 months of me buying the place, 17 properties were bought in the area, and more than half are already renovated and turned into really nice homes, and people are either renting them out or living in them now. So I give it about a 50-50%. So it's, I wouldn't say it's being gentrified by me spearheading this hotel on in a not so great area of Hudson, but it's definitely growing up.
Do you have any information about or any idea about what Third State was before you bought it? Do you know anything about the history?
I do. The previous owner told me, and this is a really fun story, that the person that him and his partner bought the house from was this old lady who used to be a madam at a whorehouse on Columbia, and she saved her money for retirement, bought the house, and then rented out all of the different apartments to pay for her mortgage and to pay for her expenses. And he remembers her, and he said that either I can't remember if it was either in the 70s or in the she was in her 70s or in her 90s, that she still had visitors, quote unquote, come by and see her. When she passed, that's when they that it was like a deal that she got to stay there. And then they bought it, or they bought it and she got to stay there. It's either one of those things. The old history, that's the newer history. The old history of the house is that it was built by the Ball family, and they had a contractor's store on Warren Street, and they were assigned as painters. But back in the early 1800s, about 1840, 1850, contractors weren't called contractors. They were called painters. And they would have to repair homes and then paint them. And so that was their final title, was what they did the last thing of. So they had all these supplies, they had all the skills. The guy that developed the mansard roof was coming through the East Coast and stopped and trained the Ball family how to build a mansard roof designed home. Real popular in Paris, real popular in France. He was coming through, and so he bought this property, built this grand mansion for his family, and the bottom floor was his grand entrance, his foyer, his greeting area to show off how good of a job he can do building homes. And look at this beautiful estate that I've built for myself. I can do the same thing for you. And so then the second floor and third floor were where they family lived and slept. There's a creepy old stairwell that is in the back of the house that goes up, and it's the servants' entrance. So the house was built in 1864. Slavery, was still a thing. There's no record of them having slaves, but there's definitely a lot of clues that they had a lot of servants. And Then I'd say by the Depression era in the early 1900s, the grandkids couldn't afford the store on Warren, so they subdivided the house into different apartments, lived in a couple of them, and then on the ground floor, they knocked out the corner of Third and State, and that was their store entrance for their store that they had moved from Warren into the building that was the Grand Mansion and is now a multifamily, house. And since I bought it, I've had it converted back to a rooming house rather than a multifamily thing. But I'm keeping the commercial space and I'm knocking that out in the next month. And that's going to be another. I'm bringing the store back. And I know that when I applied for that zoning permit, one of the board members said that he remembers either in the 60s or 70s, it used to be a candy shop. So I haven't decided what I'm going to do yet, but I might bring it back to being a little candy shop.
What are the ideas that you have at the moment?
At the moment, because I have finished all of my rooms, and I have collected a lot of junk for decorations, for tools, old furniture, you name it. I think I might just sell a lot of my junk and turn it into like a little antique shop. Other than that, I know somebody approached me to turn it into a restaurant, and I said no because I didn't want the smells to permeate the house. It's an old house, thin walls, not good for a restaurant. Another person said coffee. I don't know. I'm going to kind of let the universe lead its way and see what comes to Third State.
How did you pick the themes for all the different rooms?
My ex-fiancée did. I'm going to give her the credit. The first one was Audubon, and that was. I'm not exactly sure why she chose that, other than the fact that she had a bunch of old prints that I think she wanted to frame. And Star Wars was deep inside a marketing ploy. I had a bunch of Star Wars toys. The boys, her two boys, were really into Star Wars. We were able to get a lot of kitschy little things real cheap, and we're like, why not? Let's do a Star Wars themed department. And it turned into kind of like a little bit of a hype machine. We got an article in the New York Times from it, which really boosted sales. It really did. Travelers originally was going to be gypsy themed, and it was all going to have all kinds of crazy stuff. Like, it was going to be a gypsy apartment. But now it's turned into more of like a high class European traveler from the 1800s sort of theme. Blue room, the walls painted blue. Not much thought there. Brian's room has a fun story. While I was renovating that, somebody was staying in Audubon Suite with his girlfriend, and he saw what I was doing and how I was almost finished with it, and he goes, "Leave it the way it is. Leave the carpet, leave, the walls. Don't take down the drop ceiling. Let me have it for 4 months. What deal would you give me?" I was starving for money. I gave it to him for rock bottom price for 4 months, and he had broken up with his girlfriend that he had been with in Audubon and stayed there and wrote music for 4 months and kind of went around town, kind of cruising Hudson. He had some friends in a couple restaurants. So we never really named the room. And Roxy, the in-house, the concierge, who is my ex-mother-in-law, she and I both just kind of nicknamed it as Brian's room because it was his room. And the name stuck. Crash pad, kind of self-explanatory. It's a small little room. It's crash pad. And then green room, again, Rebecca, she had these really fancy pillows that she wanted to decorate an entire room around. And she told me to pick the paint based on that pillow, on that color in that pillow, and everything was going to accentuate around those pillows. And since we broke up, I kind of stuck with the plan, and it turned out really well. She took the pillow, but the room still turned out pretty good.
I'm interested in your relationship with Roxy and how you guys met. Would you be willing to talk about that?
I met Roxy when Rebecca was 12, back home in Deltaville. My best friend was having like a little beach party, and she was into ballet at the time, and Rebecca was taking classes with Stephanie, my friend, and she had invited her to come to this beach party. And that's where I met Rebecca when she was 12, and I met her mom, and Rebecca and I became really good friends. She was in a neighboring county, Matthews County, and Roxanne was the ag agent, and she did a lot of counseling for the farms of how to not have nitrate spill out into the bay and into the rivers, how to teach them a better way of farming, which was a big deal in the Chesapeake Bay, especially in the 80s. So, 20 years later, I lost touch with all of them. I bump into Rebecca through a mutual friend, Jade, and come to find out Rebecca had just had a little boy, less than a year old. Roxanne was living with her, kind of helping out. And yeah, Roxanne's kind of always been in the picture since we reconnected. She's always been there helping Rebecca out in whatever way possible. You know, she's got a great soul and she's a good mother. And when I bought this place, there was a lot of in-house fighting between Rebecca, Roxanne, and her boys. So Rebecca suggested that she move up here, have her own place, you know, all expenses paid. She could get a little local job. She could do her own projects. The boys were old enough. She didn't need to be there to help out. I was in the picture. So Roxanne got to have her own little apartment in a house in Hudson. And since then, Rebecca and I have split. But Roxy and I have stayed friends, and I don't know if she's planning on leaving. I don't know, we haven't really had that conversation. So I'm assuming she's going to stick by her daughter and probably find a way back into Brooklyn and stay with them. I would only expect that because she's that kind of person. But I don't know when. And that's my relationship with Roxy.
Do you still make music?
Yes. Much to my dismay right now. I'm so behind on so many projects. Yeah, the farm and Hudson have really taken a toll on my music career. Guess I'm still in a band called Science vs. Nature. The LLC still exists. We still are asked to play out. We haven't played out in about a year, though. We do live dance music, and it's a little bit more like the progressive techno sort of thing, so it's a lot deeper and less pop. So there's not much market for that in America. It's growing, but there's not much market. The market's definitely in Europe. We've been told for years and years and years that if we moved to Europe, we'd make it huge. But neither of us would have wanted to do that. And if we did, we'd have to uproot a lot of our lives. So we just kind of bit the bullet and stayed here and produced. Our writing partner is Christian Eit, and I moved up here permanently in December after Rebecca and I broke up. Excuse me. And since then, music has kind of come to a screeching halt, just because of all the projects. I still have an album to master. I've got an EP to master. I've got two remixes that are way overdue. I've got two original songs that I'm supposed to be working on. Yeah, I still work on music. I DJ'd last weekend at a Russian music festival. Yeah, there's like things still happen with the music, but it's at a snail's pace right now.
Have you always been a musician?
No.
Since childhood?
No. I've always wanted to be. I remember as a kid asking my mom for piano lessons, and she was like, no. Go do your math. Go do your science. No. And then I got really into music in adolescence, particularly right around 14, 15, 16. Really into it. I could listen to a song and tell you who wrote it, who the band was, who the singer was, who engineered it, who mastered it. Like, I read all of the credits. It was kind of weird, but I realized then that I had a photographic memory for music, not so much for words or things, but if I hear something, I can remember it and know all the information about it. College, I became a radio DJ, and from there, it's like my knowledge just exploded because they started me off with classical. Having this photographic memory of music, I would play stuff and be bored with it, so I'd never repeated anything, so I just learned classical music. And then I learned jazz, and then I learned new age, and then I learned rock and roll, and then I learned like all these things just from the radio station, and that's where I got introduced to electronic music, because I remember listening to this album that was in the new age section, and it was nothing but like real aggressive, crazy, tripped out stuff that I had never heard it before. And I was like, that's me. I need to learn that. Because it was unidentifiable. I couldn't figure out where the sounds were coming from. And it intrigued me. So from that point on, yeah, electronic music's always been in my life. But not until college, really.
And your photographic memory doesn't carry over to other places in your life?
I can remember a face. I will always remember a face. But a name, forget it. If I've read it, maybe. My grandmother had a photographic memory, but hers was with words. She would read a dictionary and then play Scrabble. Hell in a handbasket at Scrabble. She was good at it. And my mom has a bit of that photographic memory, but hers is in storytelling, believe it or not. Like, she will hear a story and be able to repeat it almost word for word. And so when she tells me these family stories, she expects me to remember them, and I'm much better off with the song. But yeah, that's about as far as it carries over. Oh, if I lay a tool down, or if I put something down somewhere, it's pretty rare that I'd lose it. I just remember where I put it. And if it moved, even at like half an inch, I'd be like, how'd that get moved? It's kind of weird.
Can you tell me a little bit more about your family? Do you have close relationship with your family members?
I do and I don't. It's a pretty bizarre relationship. For as long as I can remember, I've always wanted to leave home. I've always wanted to be gone from this godforsaken hell of nowhere and be around people and culture and things and activities. And where I grew up, it was pretty isolated. My closest neighbor was about a mile away, maybe 2 miles away. And so you would think with that amount of isolation that I'd be really close with my family. And if they ever hear this, I'm sorry I'm saying this, but I'm not that close with my parents compared to other families that I've seen. My dad worked all the time, 12 hours a day minimum. In the few days that he was off, he slept most of the time or was busy working on some sort of project. My mom worked a lot as well, leaving my brother and I to kind of fend for ourselves and do our own thing. My mom was always closer to us because she was at home. But always wanted to leave. There's always this angst of not enough. And my brother and I did not get super close. He might argue against this, but we didn't get super close until my senior year of high school when both of us realized that I was leaving, finally. And at that point, we became really close friends. He joined the military. We lost touch a little bit ever since he got back from the military and that military mindset. We've been really close, talk about once a week, which is a lot for me and my family. Don't talk to my cousins. All my grandparents are dead. Yeah. My family is my friends.
Where did you go when you first left home? Like, where was the first place that you
College. I was so happy. I chose the school farthest away from Deltaville that I could, that was still in state so that I could get in-state tuition, and that was Radford University. And I'll never forget just emptying that car out as fast as I could, getting everything into the room, and wanting to say goodbye right then and there. Like, that's it, bye. And I remember my dad, instead of giving me a hug goodbye, gave me a handshake. That was really weird. And my mom giving me the hug, and that was it. And it was this huge sigh of relief, finally, free. And there's no looking back. Right after Radford, straight to New York City.
What do you feel like has been your biggest obstacle in your life?
Ooh, that's a good one. Biggest obstacle. Not succeeding enough in my own vision. That's the biggest obstacle. I think in other people's visions, I'm successful in numerous ways. I've succeeded as a graphic designer, I've succeeded as a musician, I've succeeded as an entrepreneur, but bigger plans in my head, and I'm not even sure what they are, that's probably my biggest obstacle is myself. Is that my stomach?
Did you feel like you had some sort of vision or dream for yourself that you didn't live up to?
No, I've done everything that I've focused myself on. I was really hoping to find grander success with the music, but I've kind of taken that as a grain of salt because I've done better than a lot of other musicians. Still didn't get into that top 1% where, you hear yourself on the radio, but I did pretty well, especially in the late 90s. I was touring all over the US and Canada. I got to see parts of Europe. I've been in every state except for Alaska and Hawaii and played in all of those states. So I kind of feel like that's my least achievement. I don't know if that's the right word, right phrase, but other than that, I'm perfectly fine with everything else in my life. So, and then once the next project rolls around, I'm sure I'll tackle that one as best as I can. I don't really. The grand vision that I see in my head is ease. And I tend to find projects that take away that ease. And I think it might be a process. I remember learning that in college, in art school. Half the art of living is not the end game, it's the process. And so when you're painting a painting or working on a project, always know that it's the process of reaching that end that's the most important part. So, yeah, I might have a grand vision in my head of what the painting, my life, is supposed to be, but it's all about the process.
What are your hopes for the future?
Global peace. For what?
Your personal future.
Oh. To survive until tomorrow. At this point in my life, I really, day by day, if I don't do day by day, I think I will go crazy. I've got too many pots boiling.
Is there anything else that you would want to share or talk about that we haven't talked about?
What do you want to hear? I mean, I'm full of stories. You gotta ask the right question.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've probably lived the life of three or four different people in this life, and I'm still pretty fucking young. Oops, sorry, man. French. I've and I'm only in my 40s. I'm only halfway done.
What is the most shocking thing that you have done, in your opinion?
Shocking. I mean, is that like,
Unexpected.
wow. I mean, I've done a lot of unexpected things. I mean, there's running around a house naked. There's jumping off a cliff into the ocean. I don't know. Every day is pretty unexpected. Just take them with the punches.
Do you feel like you seek out those experiences, or they kind of just fall into your
Oh,
lap?
they definitely fall in my lap. I don't seek them out. Yeah. The world is a platter that keeps getting served to me. And I just absorb as much as I can.
What do you like, how do you spend your time when you're alone on the farm?
usually working. Alone at the farm. Yeah, I usually will start my day over coffee, doing accounting for Third State, or going down to my little Zen palace of a garden that's been neglected for about 3 weeks. I've been desperately trying to reclaim it from the wild. And then once it gets hot, I go inside and start working on the inside of the house. And then by around 4 o'clock, I have an hour break. Try and work on music. Typically, that doesn't happen because something else has come up. Yeah, that's my day. From about 5:30, 6 in the morning until about midnight.
Anything else, or do you think that we covered it all?
I don't know. I mean, I think you mentioned that this interview is supposed to be about a oral history of people in Hudson, no? Or the things about Hudson.
Well, I think all the people in Hudson are like what Hudson is about, in my opinion. So it can be, I mean, it can be whatever you want it to be about.
All right. Other than that, I really can't wait for this house to be done. I'm ready to move on. The exterior renovations happen in September. I'm real excited about that. And once it's finished, I can move all of my resources, all of my thought, everything to the farm and bring that up to par. Because right now it's glorified camping. I need to bring that up to par. And I'm sure, I guarantee, another project's going to come around and it'll distract me from the farm again. And the process will start all over again. There's always another project.
Okay, I think we can end
All right.
there. Yeah. Thank you for your time.
Cool. Thank you. I enjoyed that.